I'm going to tell you a few stories. All we have to do is listen.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, a show dedicated to love films you'd never see and most likely detest the ones that you have. I am Oscar. With me today is...
It's very bleak.
Very
bleak. Ralph?
It goes to show you how much faith I have in audiences. I don't know why I'm doing this for people, but we're doing it. I think I just like the voice of my own, hearing the voice of my own. Anyway, this is episode number 26. Let's see, today's show, we're doing, oddly enough, and it just came up really coincidentally, we're doing three animated films again.
What?
I didn't, you know, Ralph, until right now, I didn't think of that.
Why do you think I picked Blame?
Is that what you picked?
Yeah.
Did you tell me that?
I don't remember. Yeah, it's exactly what I told you. I told you. I go, might as well do all animated.
It was one of those brotherly, like, deaf ears thing.
Oh, for sure.
Stop listening to
right.
So what we'll be reviewing as part of our animation marathon, I guess all three, but one of them is meant for that, we'll be reviewing 2008's documentary critical hit, Waltz with Bashir. And then we'll continue on with Netflix's, one of their... I don't know how original, but I know they acquired the rights to show it. One of their films called Blame with an exclamation mark. So I should really say Blame!
Right. Blame.
Blame. It is Japanese made, right? It was made all there, right?
Yep.
As far as I know. And then we'll conclude our show today with a review of Pixar's latest film, Cars the Third. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Podmoviecast is also, you can find the show on Twitter, and otherpodcast.com is our central hub website where you can find everything we ever do and ever will do in the future, even if it's other podcasts that we do in the future, which is why it's called that, so I can leave it open. Detailed show notes is available for all this stuff and every episode you download. All right, Ralph, before we continue with our main reviews, as always, we talk about what we've been watching. You've heard of these things, right? What we've been watching?
Yes, I have.
Let's see. First of all, there's a bunch of stuff I've been watching, mainly TV. I'm still trying to catch up. That's how hard it is for me to...
Well, for TV, I stopped trying.
You stopped trying?
Yeah, I just, like, there's like 3 billion shows out, and you're just like, meh.
Really? I mean, not even to even
no. It's just like
interest,
no. The problem is like I start getting into something,
yeah,
and then my wife gets into it, right? And I'm like, and what, let's watch the first episode.
Oh.
And I'm like, I don't want to. I already saw it.
Clearly, like, that's
I
like saw a problem only for you.
Right? Exactly. I saw it like 2 days ago. I don't want to watch the first episode again. Like it just, I just don't want to see it again because I don't want to get burned by the show already. Right? Like too much. And then
yeah, I can see that.
Right. So there's that. And then there's another thing where my wife's so far ahead of me in a certain show, like Vikings. She's at the very last season. You know, she's got like 5 episodes left to watch. Mm-hmm. She's like, I want to watch this. I'm like, yeah, but I haven't seen any of it.
That's one of those shows that I really liked the first 2 seasons that I saw, and I fell away from it because like life and other shows. So I was like, I'll wait for the show to end, and then when Netflix picks it up or whatever streaming service that I happen to have as well, and I'll watch them all. That's my thought of that.
Right. So I've been doing, sorry, big yawn. I've been doing a lot of sports like I normally do. It's a lot of soccer going on or football.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of sports, a lot of, and just movies. Because, you know, that's easy. You digest one thing and it's over. Not on an episode and you're just like, I need more, you know?
Right. Which is funny because episodes are shorter, but not in its entirety.
Right, exactly. It's not entirety.
Right. Okay. So... Well, what prompted that question? I forgot. What did I say?
You've been stuck watching a lot of shows, and then I said...
Oh, right, and then you agreed, and you went with it, and you said you can't.
I disagreed.
Well, I disagreed from before, like you
sure.
did all the time. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. I've seen 2 movies. You know Jonathan Demme? You know that guy?
No, not personally.
Not personally. No one knows him. Like, unless his friends know him. But you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, okay. What do you do?
Probably movies.
You don't know what he did?
Okay. I mean, I'm pretty sure I do know what he did.
Yeah, okay, fine. Jonathan Demme is a pretty savvy film director, and the more I watch of his films, so I watched 2 of his films, those are the 2 films I'm going to talk about, that I'd never seen before of his. Even though I've kind of grown up watching his movies, not knowing they were all from him until I became more of a connoisseur or became more knowledgeable in the background of movies. And I found out that it was all these movies are by the same guy. He did Philadelphia. He also did The Silence of the Lambs might be his most popular. for example.
Right.
He did the remake of The Manchurian Candidate.
Something recent come out from him?
Yes. Ricky and the Flash was his last drama fiction narrative movie that came out a year or two. I think it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago. But his last film came out this year on Netflix, and that's one of the movies we're going to talk about today. It's called Justin Timberlake and the Tennessee Kids. It is a concert documentary.
Okay.
And one interesting thing about Jonathan Demme is that, and a lot of filmmakers that you'd be surprised about, like, oh, I didn't know this guy did concert movies too, or did music videos for this artist. And he did that. He did that with a bunch of people. I don't remember the bands offhand, but I'll start with this one only. Yeah, Justin Timberlake and the Tennessee Kids. It was, I want to say, as far as concert documentaries go, have you seen Manny Ruff?
No.
No, me either. I've only seen them in passing, and very rarely. Like every 5 years, that's how bad it is.
I've seen some stuff, like Iron Maiden's Flight 666.
I've seen that.
I've seen some Metallica ones. I can't remember the names of them.
Yeah.
I've seen the Beatles, right? I've seen some of the Beatles stuff, for sure.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, I've tried watching other things. It just never really catches me.
And just for me, they're never really for me, even if I love the band. I'd have to really love them.
I mean, I've tried watching, like, a Rolling Stones one, and I just never could get into it.
Yeah, this is one famous one directed by Scorsese. You know?
Right. Well, doesn't he do all of them for them?
I know he's done a few. I don't know about all of them.
Okay.
Because the guy's busy with his own
show. Well, like, he's got, like, exclusive rights.
That's why he's able to put all his songs, right, exactly. All those songs on them in his
movies. Get chummy with them.
Right, exactly. So, anyway, he did this, and Jonathan Demme is known for doing this. Apparently, he's been doing this since at least the 80s. So I saw this one. JT, Justin Timberlake. By the way, this is a wonderfully filmed thing. From my understanding, I did a little bit of background research. They used, like, I don't know, something in the early 20s of cameras positioned in different places. And it was filmed in Las Vegas 2 years ago, I think, or a year ago, and it finally came out. and I was going to say, Justin Timberlake, the amount of coverage that the cameras have, and the way it's edited and paced throughout the show, that's obviously live, when it was filmed, it is really great. It's almost like it's an unfolding story, and it doesn't, like, you know, there are certain types of concert films that I'm no expert by any means. I've seen way more many westerns, for example, that I can be more open to talk about, more opinionated on than this stuff. But I really love Jonathan Demme's touch in this particular one, and like when the stage platform lifted and the way it did in the middle of it with all the dancers, and JT is obviously like a very great singer and dancer and all this, like a charmer all at one go, you know. He's a very active guy.
Jack of all trades, yeah.
Very jack of all trades as far as entertaining goes. And when the certain pieces of the music and a certain song comes up in a certain way or whatever, a lot of them are about love and fucking, really. Songs, I mean.
Yeah.
They would focus on the instrument or the drummer or the jazz or the dancer that's doing some,
as it should.
Not a solo bit, but like, because they're all doing it all together at the same time, but at the right time. They'll cut to them in a really nice, flowing way. And I really liked it. And I unfortunately cannot speak to, it's a scene that was, you know, it's all one long shot. So that was really great. But the more important one, the one I love the most, is Stop Making Sense, which is the one he did in 1984, which might be my favorite concert documentary out of the 10 I've seen. And that's about the Talking Heads, which I showed you a little bit about them. And I can't, I can start telling you music, but I don't remember all the titles. I'm not the biggest Talking Heads fan.
Sure.
But man, that music video is amazing. The concert doc. And that one tells a story. It's almost telling you a story while it's playing live. And the way it starts is that, I'll show you the starting. The starting is really cool. It takes 10 minutes for it to actually begin because the lead singer comes out first, and the stage is for the most part set, but not really set yet. And pieces of it start coming out as he's singing his bit, his solo song, not solo song, but his own thing.
Yeah.
He has a little stereo that plays the synth for him. And then another man, member of the band, comes out. And then 5 minutes later, another one. And then they start joining in more songs and the more instruments they need to play those songs. And they add the whole band, and they combine with another band that were real popular at the time. And they combine forces, and they start singing and going crazy, and the sweating and the costumes sometimes. Really energetic, cool stuff. It's like, and that was really cool because, you know, unlike Justin Timberlake and the Tennessee Kids, you know that Justin Timberlake is the centerpiece of that fucking show. And this one, while, yes, the lead singer is definitely more center than the rest of the band, that one feels a part of a whole. They're always showing you the band. They're always showing all of them almost as equally as anyone who would be as a leader. And that's really cool. It makes you feel like you want to be on that stage if you were a fan, even if you weren't a fan. So it's a really good way to, like, even if you were there live, you would want to know what he was doing right before he came up behind that one platform, like, right before, right? And that's kind of cool. So, yeah, really like those movies. Really like them. If you like anything about concert documentaries, I recommend those two. Anything by Jonathan Demme, he's done many more. So I recommend his stuff right there. He passed recently, which is why I saw him. He passed like a month ago, and sucks. Really sucks, because he never disappointed me in any of his movies I've seen. So, Raf, you're next. You got something?
Yes, I do.
You also have like a mini marathon, right?
Yeah, I ended up just channel surfing a couple of nights ago, and I ended up watching TCM on TV, which is a Turner Classic Movie.
So right, we talked about this, I think, last time, too.
Right, I think we did talk about this. And actually, I ended up tweeting about this, if you follow me on Twitter.
Which is? I thought you weren't going to say it. Sorry. God. Not bad.
Which is at Gamer Ralph, 2 hours and 1 hour.
You've only done this for 5 years.
Yeah, at Gamer Ralph. And, I tweeted at it. I was like, I don't know why I changed the channel from TCM, because I end up watching everything on TCM anyway. Like, whatever's on, I'm like, that's pretty fucking interesting, right? But at the same time, like, I know why I change it sometimes, because I'm just like, it's in the middle of a movie.
You're too into it. But you're also too into the new.
Yes and no. No. Actually, most of the reasons I don't watch a movie is because I've already seen it, right? Or it's in the middle of it and I don't want to watch it.
Right.
That's the only reason I don't watch a movie. And I'm just like, oh, it's already in, like, other than that, I don't mind leaving TCM on. I've seen random shit and I'm just like, this is pretty fucking good. Right. That being said, there's an Audrey Hepburn marathon going on, or this month. It's Audrey Hepburn month. So the movies that I ended up watching back-to-back was How to Steal a Million. This is obviously starring Audrey Hepburn, but it's directed by William Wyler, which I think they did a bunch of movies together.
Yeah, he was very good into the rom-com stuff.
For sure, yeah. Also starring Peter O'Toole as her, what's it called, as her lead, co-lead. Hugh Griffith, which his face looked familiar to me, and I think I've seen him in some other stuff.
Okay.
And I'll show you his face right now. I know this is a bad visual, but
yeah, it's great for audio podcasting.
Right, exactly.
Audio podcasting gold.
Hopefully he pops up, but I've seen him before. He looks like a Vincent Price kind of character.
Like his uncle.
Right, a little bit, yeah. And then Eli Wallach, which I know you've seen before. He looks for sure familiar.
Yeah, he does.
Right, exactly. So this movie, I'll read the quick synopsis and I'll just get it out of the way, and then I'll let you know what I thought about it. It's a romantic comedy about a woman who must steal a statue from Paris Museum to help conceal her father's art forgeries and the man who helps her. Which is pretty cool. Basically, Audrey Hepburn plays the daughter of this guy who makes forgeries, right? Mm-hmm. And it was the, I think it was a statue of, what's it called? The Price Cellini Venus. What's it called? And then they had it like super guarded, like motion sensors and shit, you know, even though it's way back in the day. And this guy, Peter O'Toole's character, whose name is Simon Dermot, we'll just call him Simon, he ends up being like insurance agent or like somebody who investigates to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And he ends up helping her because he falls in love with her. Right, to steal this thing, and he also knows it's fake, so he's like, yeah, this shouldn't be there anyway, but I'm gonna help you guys anyway. So he steals it, and it's a really cool thing. It's just it all builds up to this moment to where they end up stealing this, and they actually, what I love about this movie and what I kind of want to mention it is that they never shy away from how much time it needs to take. Like, you feel like you're there as long as they're there. The scenes go on really long for the things, and it feels good because they're like, they're trying to steal this thing, and he's like, well, it's a procedure. We're gonna set the alarms off a bunch of times until they think that the alarms are just like someone gets annoyed, right? Or someone like they just turn it off because they're like, it's obviously miss. Just problems, right? Mm-hmm. And then once it's off, we'll be able to just grab it and go.
Yeah.
And then they kind of get it to where the point where somebody in Paris, a high up, like, royal family kind of thing, is like, hey, that alarm is really fucking loud. Turn that shit off. Deal with it. Like, it just keeps going on and off. So please turn it off. And then it's working. It's a pretty cool thing. There's even a boomerang in the fucking thing. Like, it's just a weird thing.
Yeah.
And it works out. And then both actors are great. Audrey Hepburn in it and Peter O'Toole. And it works out. All in the end, they end up getting married and all that jazz. And, you know.
Spoiler alert for an obvious plot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, for an obvious plot. That's one of the movies I saw.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, really cool. Nothing.
What year did it come out?
Oh yeah, I could probably should say that. 1966.
Okay.
So, moving on, 1 year later.
Really? 1 year?
1 year later. 1967 is this movie that's called Wait Until Dark.
I love this movie.
So, yeah.
Don't even spoil it.
When I told you.
I want people to watch it.
Sure. When I told you that I was watching, that I ended up watching these two movies, you were like, I fucking love Wait Until Dark. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm glad you saw it. I'll read the synopsis, and then I'll let you know my impressions. A recently blinded woman who is terrorized by a trio of thugs while they search for heroin stuffed doll they believe is in her apartment. Kind of spoiler that part, but we kind of knew what it was anyway.
Yeah.
This is obviously starring Audrey Hepburn, but this is starring a young Alan Arkin who plays a villain. Fucking mind-blown.
A hippie villain, too.
Hippie villain, sure, yeah. Also,
he's like a Charlie Manson type, which makes sense during the time because Charlie Manson was pretty huge.
Right, exactly. Starring also Richard Crenna, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and Jack Weston, which I know they've done other stuff. Directed by Terrence Young, which I think was her husband at one point, if I remember correct.
And Hepburn's?
Then, yeah, Hepburn's husband. Okay. I think it was. I'm not too sure, though. I don't want to.
It's Hollywood, old Hollywood.
Sure. But I know Audrey Hepburn because this is what TCM told me before the movie started.
Oh, yeah, they was giving info. Yeah.
Right. Is that she actually started with blind people.
Oh, yeah, she
good. Researched the role really well.
Yeah, she did.
And she ends up wearing contacts in this movie for that, but she didn't want to. She really fought against it.
They had contacts back then?
They had contacts back then. They ended up
putting her... They just spray painting your eyes with fucking lead.
All right, you ready? Hold them up.
They can only do it twice in their careers because it would go blind for real.
Right. Yeah, it's a really cool movie that it kind of builds up towards... It's a slow build-up, and you kind of don't know where it's going to go. Or like when it could stop more like that. That's the more of that.
It's an interesting power struggle.
It really is. And it's super interesting to see this, Audrey Hepburn's character, who's, I think like 1 or 2 years blind, maybe at best.
Something like that.
Really like
she doesn't have net braille now.
Right. She wasn't just recently blinded. Like she's literally like a week ago. No. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
She's already going to school to learn braille. She knows some braille.
Right. But she is not like a born blind. Like,
right. She's not born. Like, it wasn't an accident. Right. So that's really cool. A lot of cool stuff's going on. She's trying to be hoodwinked and she's trying to figure out what's going on. And with very little help.
Right, and it's really tense because you know she's blind.
Right, you know she's
blind. It's like that movie we saw last year.
Don't Breathe?
No, not Don't Breathe, because the bad guy's blind, I know what you're saying, but no, like with the girl that was deaf. And she had to figure shit out. Hush. That's right.
Okay, yeah. Kinda reminds me of Hush, yeah. Sure. Yeah, other than that, like Oscar doesn't want me to spoil it, but really cool movie.
Really seek it out, guys.
I actually highly recommend it. It's everything about it I really love. And actually, she stopped filming, I think, after this for a little bit because she just had like a kid or something and she wanted to spend more time with him.
Maybe.
But yeah, letting you know. So yeah, saw some Audrey Hepburn stuff. Cool.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know where you can find it. Wait until Dark. Clearly, if you have TCM, it's probably on there. So check it. I recommend that for sure. I want to see it again. I saw it in college for an assignment or class thing to show us something. And like, what is this movie? That's amazing. Anyway, that is what we've been watching. All of that jazz here, kind of a little bit of old, but we kind of focus on one kind of Hollywood person in our recent watches, which is funny because Ralph and I don't plan what we watch, what we've been watching anyway.
No.
It's kind of a scattershot every time. So now on to our main review, Waltz with Bashir, starting now.
No, not ואתה, אתה מזהה אותי פה, משם?
לא.
אני חושב שאתה תלך תברר מה קרה שם באמת. איך אתה קשור לזה?
מסוכן שאולי אני אגלה לעצמי דברים שאני לא רוצה לדעת.
אני
פתאום בום, ונפתח לי הזיכרון מהלך.
An Israeli film director interviews fellow veterans of the 1982 invasion of Lebanon to reconstruct his own memories of his term of service in that conflict. It is...
I thought it was Lebanon.
Lebanon, that's right. It's written and directed by Ari Folman. It is starring him as well. Obviously, this is a documentary, a strange documentary, because it is, of course, animated. And in some forms, in many forms, it is scripted, which is very interesting to talk about. We'll get into the idea of the genre. And it also stars all the people that are themselves, and I will do my best here. Ron Ben Yishai, Ronnie Dayag, Ori Sivan, Shmuel Franklin, Frankel, that's what I remember him. They say his name a lot. Sava Solomon, and I'll stop there. Well, he was important there. Anyway, whatever. If you guys want to know, it has a 91% Metascore type of deal, so it's a pretty highly rated film. Not very popular, of course, with audiences, because that's not going to happen. It just won't happen.
An Israeli movie?
And this isn't
an Israeli animated movie, not popular with the audiences?
No, what? And Ari Folman is also popular in our books, Raph, because he made a film later on called The Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Which is his latest film, also very controversially weird, and he definitely bends genre, he bends reality in his movies in many ways, especially with that one, because that's all scripted. But I recommend it, even though it's strange. Anyway, Waltz with Bashir, was it your first time watching it, Raph?
Yeah.
Really? Ooh, interesting. What did you think of it?
I felt this movie was a lot longer than it was watching it, and I bring that up because I think it's the subject that's being told to you. There's so much detail going on in this, and it's from descriptive, and then you're and visual at the same time. So you're being described what you're watching, but you're watching it to make sure you're being described what it's the right thing, almost, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of that. So it's a lot of work that you're doing for this movie. I could have watched it. I could have put it in English. I think they had an option for that, but I saw this in the language. Israelis, whatever.
Me too. It was Israeli. Yeah, I got nothing. I'm an idiot.
Me Israeli. Too. Yeah.
Arabic, maybe?
Sure. And I watched it in that, and I ended up... it's a lot. Like I said, it's a lot. There's a lot to... It feels like a lot.
It's a heavy subject, man. It's essentially a war
film.
You're
taking it in. It is a war film.
It's told in
and,
flashback.
And what I... I guess because we're talking about it's what did you bring up? You said it was all scripted.
No, but a bunch of it was because
What it feels like,
because it's like go ahead.
What my impression was, and I'll just throw it right back to you, which is my impressions of the movie was I did this animated so I can give my friends a little bit of anonymity, right? Where it was more like I just had a conversation with them, and they never had to feel like I had a camera in front of them, because even one friend is just really adamant about
it. Right, one friend is very...
Very adamant about, you can draw me, you cannot video me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's clearly what he says. And he's like, okay, no problem. Right. And it's almost like, no, none of his friends want, or none of the people that he talks to, want to actually be filmed, but they do want to talk to him about it. Which is an
interesting
thing.
I think they're like either they're a combination of his friends or colleagues.
Sure.
They're not unimportant to him, so like they're helping him out.
Most of them are friends and colleagues, and some of them are random people.
This is a very introspective documentary because it is like that movie, that other documentary made by that girl, Stories We Tell. Remember that documentary?
I didn't see it, but yeah.
I thought we reviewed it.
Pretty sure I did.
Well, Stories We Tell is like about the documentary filmmaker's like mother and her relationship with her, you know, and their history together, and they find out these secrets about the family. It's kind of like about that. It's very introspective. She's asking questions. This guy, Ari Folman, I hope I said that right. Ari, he's asking questions. And he's having a crisis, and because he's asked these questions in his whatever, he starts interviewing these people, and he finds himself making a movie.
It's not even interviewing.
He
people.
Stumbles into a movie.
Right, right. Well, I think this movie is made. In the end, this is literally a movie of like kind of self discovery for himself. This isn't about anybody else.
Right, it's about him. Yeah, about the whole time he's trying to remember the massacre that 1982 or whatever it was in Lebanon, the great massacre of several concentration camps, refugee camps, not concentration camps, refugee camps that were slaughtered, and massacred. Two of them were slaughtered, and that's where he was. Like, he remembers going there. He does not remember the actual massacre, and he's asking people that he knew that are still alive, that were there on that day or around him, and ask them questions to, like, hey, what do you remember? What happened?
Right,
because
exactly.
My memories are either not trusted or I don't remember.
Right.
And the very nature that I think this movie is amazing because it explores the nature of traumatic, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, literally, the post in that is, like, 20 years later because this is 20 years later.
Well, yeah, what's really cool is the beginning of the movie is a friend comes to him troubled about what happened in the war, right?
A dream about the dogs. Very creepy opening.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And his biggest thing about the dogs is that he had to kill dogs because he was like, they told him, we know you're not going to kill people because you're a scaredy cat, right? So you get to kill all of the guard dogs
and he killed all 26 of them.
Yeah. And he killed all 26 of them, I think. He remembers all the 26 dogs that he killed, right? And that was his big thing, right? And this guy completely, like, even bigger, I would say, right? That he's dealing with, and he wasn't dealing with it.
Yeah, because he asked him, what do you remember? And, like,
he's like, I don't remember shit.
Oh, no, what do you think of the war? He's like, I haven't thought of the war.
Yeah, I haven't thought of the war. It's been 20 years. What do I need to think about it?
And while that may seem callous to someone who hasn't been to war or something, I immediately saw it as, at some point saw it as a man who had a very great self-defense mechanism to not remember shit that went down, shit that is fucked up, and then all this talking,
I mean, he was super guarded. Yeah.
That sparked that fire in his brain to start remembering and having nightmares and shit like that.
He couldn't sleep well after that.
He couldn't sleep well. He started remembering one event after another. Like, it was always like the next day he remembers something else.
He had one specific dream that they bring up a scene of it like five times or something like that in the movie, maybe even more. But right, I think it starts off in the beginning of the movie.
It's funny how that's the one that really gets him more because it's not like...
And it has nothing to do with the war. That didn't actually happen in the war, right?
Right.
And it's just a bunch of different things saying about the war, right?
Right.
Which is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so what do you feel like he's trying to do besides the obvious? Like, do you think he's trying to do something else, Ari, in his search to find out what happened to the massacre? Is that really his beginning and end?
Honestly feel his beginning, I think he stumbles upon everything in the movie. And he wasn't probably even making a movie until maybe a little bit past halfway or halfway through the actual movie where we see. Because after that, he's just like, I actually have a fucking movie here. Like, I can write this. Like, I have all the dialogue. I have all this, right?
And it's not like adaptation meta, but it's a little meta.
And you could tell he either went back to all of his friends and he's like, remember what you said here? Can you repeat that or whatever, right?
Or maybe he's just a guy who just remembers.
Or maybe he just tape recorded everything, right? We never know. Yeah. But at the same time, really cool, right? So a lot of the stuff works out for him. And I think definitely towards the end, especially the very end of the movie, the very end, and like that last little scene.
Well, let's not spoil it yet.
Sure. But I'm saying, I don't want to spoil it. I'm saying because of that, he does stumble onto something where he's just like, there should be something bigger that I need to speak about this war, right? But I think overall the biggest message from the movie is the self-realization for him about the war. Like, him trying to help himself in the end. I think that's the main thing.
I think that, and also, as far as my last thing I'm going to say here before we go into spoilers, if you're not sure about watching this movie or not, it is very heavy material. There's very little funny in it. I mean, there's not every moment's like super dead serious, but there are definitely harder moments than others. I want to recommend it as a vehicle to explore what genre can do and how you can bend them to your will. And the way this guy makes an autobiography about dreams and memories in a documentary format, but with animation, implies a great sense of using the medium of filmmaking to answer a question that feels unanswerable. and then showing it to the world, which is also feels like also equally impossible to do. And somehow this movie pulls it off, in my opinion.
Well, that's isn't that the brilliance of animation?
Yeah, it's the brilliance of the well, the way this guy uses it anyway. I mean,
well, no, that's the whole purpose of animation. Also, is that we're able to show what we're thinking or what we can think of, right? And we bring it to life. Because you can't. Some of the things I can think of, crazy shit, I could never make that come to fruition with real people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Elbows don't bend that way.
Right.
They just don't.
Thank you. I was thinking knees, but sure.
Okay, right on. How will chairs look like? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's get into some spoilers for Walt Bashir starring now.
Your knees
are... ובקורס קצינים אתה לראשונה בחיים אומר טוב נו אחרי כל כך הרבה זמן להיות עם מג בוא נחליף קצת קיבלתי גלים ובשלב הזה שיורים עלינו מכל הכיוונים לראשונה אתה מבין אני מבין שאני לא יורה בגליל כמו שאני חסר לי מה שאני רגיל אליו כל השירות הצבאי שלו ואני אומר לארז ארז
Your knees are the chairs.
Got it.
There you go.
That's still hard. Sounds hard to do. Mm-hmm. So, not that there's much to spoil, but I just want to be more free to talk about the later on. So, needless to say, since we're in spoilers now, do you think he succeeds in his quest?
For him, yes.
Do you think it was worth it, though? Because there was a few moments when he's talking to that friend from the beginning of the movie that's telling him the dog nightmare that he comes back to like 2 or 3 times.
And even though he gets the...
And he doesn't want to know the answer, really. I don't think he says it quite point blank, but you get the feeling at least.
You get the feeling that he's going to eat at him the rest of his life.
Right, and that he doesn't want to do the deep search exploration thing that...
I think he's going to get some sort of relief... In the end, regardless, it might not be right away, but maybe, I hate to be an ass, but 10 years, 20 years down the line?
Another 10, 20.
it'll go away. It'll be something that'll go away because of the fact that now that he knows, all it is about letting go after that. It's about forgiving yourself or just knowing that there's forgiveness or whatever and kind of letting it go. Like, it happened. What could you have done differently? Like, why let it eat at you and stuff like that?
I mean, the parts that they remember the most, all these stories, they remember the parts where there are, like, civilian deaths by accident. Like, when they have to kill a kid with a bazooka, when they're in their panic and they arrive at the beach the first time and they shoot at that car because they're just shooting to shoot, and they destroy that couple and the family.
I think the theme of this, like, that war was shoot to shoot.
They're not showing actual battles.
Yeah. No. The theme of that war was shoot to shoot.
Right.
Because at most of the scenes you're watching,
battle, soldier,
they're just
be
shooting.
Soldier.
Why are we shooting? Right. No, just shoot, dude. What do you mean? Where are we shooting? I just shoot, dude.
Right. That's what they're telling him. And that scene when they're carrying their dead comrades.
Right. That was a crazy
and wounded. Right, exactly.
You just got there.
They remember literally the parts that never seem to be glorified because you can't glorify it.
Right.
In film and TV or books or whatever. So I think that was fascinating, an aspect to the movie. I think there's a lot of this movie that says about war without telling you, hey, this is what I think about war, because they're just telling you what they went through.
Right.
And there's a feeling there.
It's almost like what they...
Right. There's a difference there. No one's preaching to you. No one's telling you, don't do war.
Right. Because but it's ABC. Almost... It's like literally what they have stuck in their head.
Right.
It's something that's the key moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Even the most successful comrade that he visits, which that guy was Sweden, was it? Maybe?
It was 10 Acres, yeah.
Like 10 Acres. And he's describing all the shit he's going to do. Yeah. He's selling some weird. Yeah. That was strange. And,
and everyone's like, we thought you were going to win like the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. Yeah. They're like, yeah.
He's like, why?
They all pegged him for like this genius guy.
Right. And everybody
and he
like,
is, but I guess
right,
not
no,
the
he's
same
smart
way.
Smart guy, right? But everybody was just like, he was just like, why would you think that?
I just want to be rich and have 10 acres.
Well, that's not even, that's not,
oh, whatever.
I want to be rich.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm well off. Like, fuck that.
Yeah, well, fuck that, yeah. They don't get paid the same way they used to, Nobel Peace Prize winners.
Right.
So, even that guy has something stuck in his craw, even if he won't admit it. He's like the coolest one. He's the one who's more like, it just happened. You know, like, not that he didn't say it like that, but he has that feeling.
Right, yeah, no, I get it.
I think the animation all does really well to enact these personalities on every person, which is, like, if it was, like, Pixar-ly animated, it would feel way less believable.
Yeah.
And if it was animated in the style of... maybe more hand-drawn. This is more in the style of, like, Waking Life, right? Like, they're almost like they have those animation suits on.
Yeah.
Which just feels both real and not real.
Yeah.
I can't describe the animation because I'm not a professional in animation.
Right.
But
it does feel dated, sadly.
A little, but not much, though.
No.
I think if they up it for HD, I think it'll look fine.
No, it's not. No, actually, no, you don't need to update it for HD. It looks fine because of the way it's drawn and everything.
Yeah.
What it feels dated on, like some of the certain movements, you could tell just the animation's not there for it yet. Mm. They can't do all these crazy things, you know.
Yeah, but the movie's also very purposely slow.
Sure, at the same time, yeah. So it's fine.
It's kind of worse for it.
Like I said, the movie it's going to get away with it regardless. You can watch this movie 20 years down the line, and you'll be like, oh yeah, cool, I get it. It doesn't have to be HD-ified or anything.
Right. I do think he succeeds, but I think he regrets his success.
Yeah.
Because the fact that, because at the end we smash cut to a live version of the events that happened.
Like my worst part of the movie.
Was supposed to be. It's supposed to be give you that, you know, the, I was going to say Donkey
Kong. No, it kind of took me out of it, actually.
Oh, it took you out? Okay, then we'll talk about that.
But, yeah.
So you don't agree with it?
No, I just kind of, like, everything about it you're telling me and you're showing to me in an animated form, right?
Right.
Perfectly fine with that. Like, and honestly, you could have shown that to me in animated form, and it could have been even more gruesome, right? Because you just showed me stock video or some film footage, should I say. Stock video, because that's not what it is. Film footage of somebody, of when it happened, they were just shooting, you know,
right.
Filming afterwards, all these women crying and stuff like that. And the impact, it wasn't there for me, sadly. It just wasn't there. Like,
I'm curious, did you have a reason right away, or did you have to think about it?
No, I just kind of like, when it clicked off, they were crying and they were showing to me, and I was like, okay, like this is basically where his dream leaves off, right? Where it ends.
Yeah.
Where all these women are coming down the line, down the alley or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're crying right in front of him, passing through him, just looking at this wreckage.
Yeah.
And I get like, that's what he, like, I guess that's what's really stuck at him, like these people crying and everything, right?
Right.
I get that, but I feel like, I felt like that almost disservice the rest of the movie a little bit, because like I felt like the whole movie is you're talking about this guy and coming to the realization for him,
right.
And I felt that at the very end it was him adding on to like, this was a real war, guys, like it wasn't just not like, it's not something that, you know, like you need to know was real as I saw it, right? Mm-hmm. And he needed to add that on there.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that's the way I took it.
I didn't even think of it that way.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, so the most obvious answer why on the opposite of that,
sure,
where it's more positive, is that it shows you an actual punch of realism where what animation can never do is give you something real.
Sure.
Like that.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying, I'm just saying visually speaking. And viscerally and visually. And so when you get there, I mean, you find out that, you know, and you think about that scene even after you watch it, and like, Ari must have gone out and found that footage.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what jogged his memory. You know, maybe he searched
doubt it,
for
yeah.
it.
I wouldn't doubt that's the first thing he found.
Right, as I'm saying. Like,
after that conversation with his friend.
Years, well, not looking, but after 20 years, he's looking for this thing,
sure,
his memory.
Yeah.
And he finds it in his video. Maybe that's what he's showing us, that this is what he found.
Maybe.
It could be that simple. And or it's probably a lot more complicated, because it could also mean that, hey, this is what animation cannot do for me at this moment anymore,
yeah,
and this is what it was, and it's like.
I mean, I get what you're saying.
Right.
I'm not dismissing your point of view from it. I get it completely.
If it does diminish the rest of the movie, I think that even that answer he would love. Like, I think
Ari's
point of view, like, it would say, like, yes, you shouldn't take the dreams and flashbacks of people who were still alive of that time. To take credit for what is really there, which is a serious thing. Right. So, like, if anything, he probably wants you to discredit that shit.
But I don't want to. I know.
Not discredit it, but, like, feel like it's
sure,
diminishing.
No. I got all of that from the movie already. Like, from his movie. I didn't need the additional to tell me it was really real. I know it was real. Like, and maybe because we're in, like, recent times of war going on, I just feel like it's, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I know. It's interesting. Hmm.
Yeah.
I think it works for me, I would say.
Yeah.
What do you think, do you think, is there, like, I mean, I don't know many other people's opinions on that ending, but
sure.
Do you feel that ending was only for Ari film, Ari, the director?
No, or the very end, like the little
finish?
Or
is he actually trying to say something about the way I was saying it?
No, the way I took it is a little bit more what you're saying. Is I got that,
like,
reason.
Did you feel like he had to show that?
No, I didn't feel like he had to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a yellow yes or no. It was like he didn't have to, because he really didn't have to if he didn't want to, right? But I think in the end, he thought, and himself, is that he needed to put that in there. So there's a difference.
That's why I feel like
right, and I get that. Yeah. But like I said, I get it for me. It just doesn't.
I think the the very
I sound
nature,
very I sound very dickish right now. I'm not trying to be.
No, you. I mean, you clearly are.
Right.
I'm, no, of course. No, I think that I think this process of making this film. I think it took like 5-6 years, maybe more.
I don't doubt it.
To make the movie, because 1982, 20 years later, that's 2002. But the movie came out 2008, so I'm counting that way. 6 years, right? Anyway, so I think that the very nature of making this film successfully and it came out the way he needed it to come out was his therapeutic cross to bear, the bridge he needed to, you know, go from trauma but also remembrance and respect to the shit he did or was a part of,
right.
To going, accepting it and getting past it in a good way, not in a bad way. Because the guy's still out there doing stuff. He didn't commit suicide after he made the movie or anything right. like that. Thank God. Because that would put a different spin on it. This is one of those rare movies, I think, where the people behind the making of the movie actually matter. Because you know how you've often said, like, we don't care what actors do or what filmmakers are arrested for. Who gives a shit? As long as they get out good movies, we don't know them. Yeah, they should be. I don't care what they do. I don't care. That doesn't affect my enjoyment.
Right.
Or hate of their movies.
Right.
It does not affect them at all. People often do, though. Not to say they should do that. I'm not condoning Woody Allen fucking 12-year-olds.
Right.
I don't think he's doing that either.
Well, it's about artists in general.
Yeah, yeah.
I can like somebody's art, you know.
And hate them as a person.
Oh,
right. That's right. Fine. Yeah, it's totally cool. I can separate those things.
Yeah.
But I think with this guy, he's one of those rare exceptions where you kind of need to fucking know about him.
Yeah, there is
a rare,
more
respect or less respect for the film he created.
Yeah.
And I think it goes hand in hand, which is interesting because that rarely happens. Mm. Maybe Charlie Kaufman happens too sometimes.
I really like how all of his friends are like, well, you're the filmmaker. And he's just like, yeah, it's just lame. Yeah,
he's talking to big, wealthy businessmen and therapists. And
right. Well, I love his lawyer friend, right?
Lawyer friend,
and then he's like, why did you wake me up at 6:30 in the morning? And he's like, I have these kids everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, poor guy. Poor woke him up so early and he has to deal with all this shit. And then he's like, you know, I could charge you. He's like, my lawyer is 10 times less than you are. Why the fuck would I? I'm going to you because you're my friend and you're not paying me shit. I'm not paying you shit. And I need to help with other shit.
That was a good line.
That was a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Real funny stuff. Like, I could have totally saw myself in that lawyer's front shoes.
Right.
I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, a lot of your friends call you. Can you take me to the airport?
I woke up at 6:30. I'm like, dude, it's 4. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. I like that scene also when they describe how memory works. They did that. The guy was describing this test. This therapist was describing the test of memories, which felt very Memento to me. The test was that they showed these group of people, let's say 200 or whatever, and 20%, and they would tell them about this memory, that things in the memory were fabricated and some things were not, or something like that. I don't remember the exact thing. But it basically leads to that 20% of those people that they tested this on believed for a fact that they experienced this memory that never existed.
Right. Just fills in the blanks for you.
Right. There's like there's details that never existed. Like said that. There was a carnival there.
It just fills in your blanks.
Oh, we never said
your memories lie. That's what he said.
Your memories lie. That was really cool.
That is a really cool thing, yeah.
I think,
his friend's obviously, like, clearly, like, his smart friend that he has to go talk to.
Right.
Like, his really grounded friend. He's like, yeah, like, I do not know this, dude. Like,
he's the hacker in
his
research, right?
Right, yeah.
The hacker version.
It's an injury. Because he goes to him like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say on the world?
No, it's a cool movie. It's a really touchy subject.
Visually speaking, I mean, it's very striking.
Sure, yeah. It's
the tank in moonlight.
It's hard to pitch this movie, though. Like, I mean, it's hard to pitch it.
This movie's so
I would not be able to get Luke to watch this movie, for example.
I know.
And, like, even though it's a documentary, and it's animated. Like, he likes both of those genres. Like, and an animated shouldn't be a genre, but I'm just saying it's in animated general.
I know, but the whole reason of this is that we're saying animation is not a genre.
Right, exactly. But what I'm saying is, like, he loves documentary movies, right?
Right.
And going this way, I honestly think he would still be, like, not enticed to watch this movie.
He might have seen it. We just can't. I'm not going to call him in Alaska.
Neither am I, yeah.
And
we can.
The service is bad. Last time we called him, it kept breaking up.
It's Alaska.
I'm not going to do it. We can't do a show that way.
That's why we're not.
We can't do a show. We can't be at any show anymore until he gets back. So, but he probably did see it because I gave him all the movies. He's probably pretty bored too, so.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway. Like I said, the visuals are very great colors, very great use of gold and like muddy brown. I never thought I would say those combinations. But like, you know, when he keeps describing that scene where they're coming off the beach into the city.
Yeah.
and the flares are going off and the shadows are moving the flares. Yeah. I think that you can't, that's in your head, you know, the dogs are just in your head.
Yeah.
They just pop at you and they growl at you, and it's right. Very striking film, even yeah, for its time or not, even though it's 9 years ago, right? So, yeah, I totally recommend it, even if, despite its dark subject material. I mean.
What's your elevator pitch to somebody for this movie to watch?
There's no elevator pitch.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that this movie is easy to sell, but right, I want people. I don't care. I rather yell at people or you know, I start slow. I start with a comic, but like I dismiss people who only do things just for moments of entertainment. They will forget they will forget themselves. Like, it doesn't, I don't know, it drives me crazy. Just that, I mean, I get that you could every once in a while, even most of the time. We love action movies, Ralph. They're the most enjoying thing ever. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I love those things. I've seen Avengers more than Waltz with Bashir, but I would respect Waltz with Bashir more than the Avengers.
Right, exactly.
And I've seen it now. It's my third time watching this movie, Bashir. Oh, what do you think of how we find out about the title? Like, how it worked out? Like, this hero.
It felt a little bit, the Waltz part felt a little bit hemmed on there.
Of the guy with the machine gun?
Yeah, like how he, like, it felt a little, for me, it felt a little hemmed on. But other than that, it was cool.
War is a fucking crazy time.
Sure, yeah.
He could have done that. Yeah. Now, we've often hear stories, not just in film, but in books, or even, not novelizations of it, but like diaries of people who were there that wrote it after the fact, that like, there was this guy who went crazy suddenly on the trenches and just, you know, ran from one point to the other. Didn't get hit once. He should have gotten hit 75,000 times, but he just got lucky. You know, shit like that. That just happens.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's one of those moments of many, I'm sure, in every war. In every scenario where there's death and murder and raping, and you know, that guy who described him killing that old man in the house, and he didn't say the words, he just like motioned everything. Like, all these things, you know, they're like memories that they're too strange to not be real.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Stranger than fiction kind of things. And I think this movie really nails that moment. Those moments, I mean. So yeah, I recommend it. Waltz with Bashir. It's available probably nowhere for you to rent or buy. You could buy it, but not like streaming.
It's probably at your local Family Video.
Right, Blockbuster?
No, Family Video still exists, though.
No, but Blockbuster is apparently, they're only a hit in Alaska because they have shitty bandwidth there, so Blockbuster videos are still there.
No.
Yes, they are. There's like, the last 40 stores are in Alaska.
There's 40 more stores?
I heard, yeah.
I need to go visit Alaska.
Really? Really?
I saw my Blockbuster card.
Oh, me too.
No. I owe money to them. Nope.
Nope. Not having it. Please rewind. Kids, ask your parents, Jesus, on everything we're saying. Yeah. Everything we're saying.
Fuck that fee.
Fuck that fee. Yeah, it was a shitty fee. It was like $2 at least.
That was stupid.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review a much lighter film, but also animated, called Blame. Blaming what?
Blame.
Blame you. That's what I say. Blame with an exclamation point. So stay with us.
ブラム、俺はキリー、人間だ。
In the distant technological future, civilization has reached its ultimate net-based form. An infection in the past caused the automated systems to spiral out of order, resulting in a multi-leveled city structure that replicates itself infinitely in all directions. Now humanity has lost access to the city's control and is hunted down and purged by the defense system known as the Safeguard.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
This movie, Blame... Netflix original, Blame! Exclamation point, as Oscar likes to say it. Let's go with that.
Yes.
There's a lot. That description is not even half. There's a lot more than that. Because the movie is a lot. You're just thrown in a world. That's why.
True.
In a world, in the future of this world, which is kind of what we just explained. So let's get right off the bat. Why the fuck is this movie called Blame?
Yes, we should say. We saw the entire movie, myself, like, today. Okay. And I can't help but notice that no one, I don't think no one ever used the word blame, like, when they, to blame someone. No one's called blame. There is no, as far as I can see, no computer in the background or corporation.
No one even named. Brings up the question of who is to blame.
Right, because we
already know the answer.
Right. Well, we don't know where the origin of the infection is.
Doesn't matter.
But
we know the answer, right?
What was it?
Humans. Humanity is
Oh, yeah, sure. Is there anything else? That's a very, like, subtle title, then.
Right, I mean, that's... Yeah.
And what's with the exclamation point? I don't understand why this movie's titled this way. I haven't been more confused with a title since, like, Upstream Color.
That's a fucking confusing title.
Right, it doesn't make any sense, but that title is cooler to say.
Sure, yeah.
And it fits the weirdness of that movie
more. Of course
more.
It does, yeah.
Blame doesn't fit into anything, so maybe Blame wins that one.
Maybe, I guess, if we're having title wars.
Yeah, title wars. That's a podcast to do.
Actually, that is.
Right? We could research that a little bit, like weird titles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit.
We should do that. I don't know why we would do it, but we should do
why
it.
Why wouldn't we?
Yeah, right. What's stopping us? Nothing.
Nothing.
Except research.
Let's do it now.
Right now, yes. Now we read this movie.
Wikipedia.
So I'm going to put that out there. The title makes no sense. So ignore the title, please. But, yeah, you're leading this, so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. All right, cool. Making sure. Let's just go off the bat. How confusing is this movie to you?
Not very much at all.
Oh, okay, cool. So you didn't have any problems with it?
Nah. No. I think it's like it's a combination of a lot of different movies we've seen in the past.
Sure.
Some more popular than others. It has like a dash of Dark City, you know, a pinch of Matrix, you know, maybe more than a dash and a pinch of Horizon Zero Dawn. Quite a big chunk of it felt Horizon Zero Dawn, the video game from this year. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of machines and the future of the post-apocalyptic mechanicalness of it all. Like, oh my God, yeah, I've seen that 1,000 times. Made sense. I didn't need to know anything. You know what I felt like a lot, too? A movie we reviewed recently, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. Another movie where it's like humanity has been so far afield from their great days of science and innovation to, like, they don't even know how they got there. They're in some strange world they don't recognize anymore, and they're ruled by things that are clearly the sins of their past people, but so far behind, like thousands of years, that no one knows where it started or how it began, what anything means. They don't know languages anymore. They don't know what a machine looks like. They only see enemies when they don't see how they can control them. Like, yeah, all that shit makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nausicaa felt very similar to this movie.
Right. I would agree. Yeah, it's definitely a movie that's been done before, or the plot, should I say. A plot that's been done before. It's just modernized, I suppose. I guess.
I mean, it's his own.
Yeah, for sure. Overall, what'd you think of the movie?
I thought the best thing about it was kind of the world, actually. The world building in this movie was way better than I thought it would be. Maybe because I found it so easy to relate to because of those other movies and books or whatever we've read in the past. Funny enough, there's this, it reminded me also of this, like, the weirdest episode of the latest season of Fargo, season 3, where they deviate from the thing, one of the characters who dies in the show, turned out to be a sci-fi writer. And one of his stories about this robot that goes through the ages, and it kind of reminded me of that in a weird way. Anyway, the world building felt really right to me. It didn't over-explain. There's, you know, it opens with exposition because it's, you know, it's trying to intro you to this world of survival. But they don't attach too much destiny into everything. They don't attach, like, everything happens in a cause and effect way. There's no heightened sense of God things, or there's like the last people on the world, or
right.
anything like
that. Did really open, yeah.
Right, and it kind of gives these villagers who we meet in the film, and then this one lone character, and then a weird other lone scientist character who's a robot. All these characters, they're of their own. Like, none of them are spent too much time with. Even the one you think is the main actor, the one that starts, you know, our introduction to the story, even she isn't really the star of this movie, because there is no star in this movie. The star of this movie is the consequences of them trying to survive. It's like that's the star of the movie, which is interesting, and I think they did a good job. That's like the best part about it.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely about where the world building and, like, how crazy the just shit got out of hand and
we can't even get a grasp of how to get it back because of generations of things have happened already.
And nothing bad happens. Everyone's decision makes sense in the moment, even if they fail. Right? Things like that.
Everything, yeah, like, right.
And then, Prometheus should take a book out of this fucking
right, well, what's funny
page.
Is that, yeah, you think something like something else should happen or whatever just because you've kind of been built pre-programmed already to think something else, a different outcome is going to happen. But they're in it. They're just like, we got to roll with the punches here, guys. Like,
right. The stakes are always really high.
Right, exactly. And well, for them, it's life or death. That's all it is.
For them, they have like literally a day's worth of food.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Right.
For to feed 150 people, they said, or something like that.
Right.
Very small village.
Yeah.
And they keep losing people every day.
Right, yeah. A lot of stuff going on.
If anything, it opens with these kids who are so, like, and it's not like a hazing thing either. It's like for good reason, for good hearts. I mean, they put on these weird suits to go out and hunt for the adults that are too tired or wearing thin. That they feel like they have to do to help out the village,
and right, to find more food,
and
which supplies in trouble. General, yeah.
And then, but they lose more than they gain in that expedition.
A lot more, yeah.
Yeah, that opening is really cool. I really like it because it's the most quiet the movie ever gets, because they're trying to show us the world, and they're trying to introduce these mechanical supervillains, which are the safeguard.
Sure.
But here's another interesting thing is that we're also, as human beings, right, we're pre-programmed to be on the human side when it comes to conflicts like this.
Yeah.
I want to see a movie so daring that it'll side with the aliens at all times or side with the robots.
Right. The robots are just doing what they're programmed to do.
Right.
In the end.
And it's our fault that they're there.
Right, exactly.
And ultimately, they're defending themselves.
Right, right.
Or something like that, right, whatever exactly. They think. Right. So I just think that's...
Yeah.
But it's really cool how horrendous they look to them.
Right. I do agree with you. The beginning of the movie is kind of really cool. I guess there is a main actress, which is the little girl.
Zuru.
Yeah, Zuru. But other than that, our Kida, right? Kidia? Or...
Gili. That's how it was written on the subtitles. But Gidi.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, he...
It?
It. Yeah, whatever it is. I think he's the weakest thing of this movie.
I want to talk about that for sure. That's a spoiler thing, but I want to get to talk.
Yeah,
about
I think that. I think he's the weakest part of the movie. And I hate to say that. Well, just get into spoilers now.
I want to say before we get into spoilers, do you want to feel like you want to recommend it? What kind of audience is this for? Things like that.
I mean, I guess I would recommend this in the movies. Kind of like what you said. I would see more like a Appleseed-ish kind of thing. It's not super mech heavy, but it is very like technology heavy. So like a lot of like prompts up, kind of like Iron Man suit.
Maybe more
Androidy. Yeah, I guess more Androidy. You could tell you. So if that's kind of your role, there's cool destruction. It's really the world that's really cool.
There's no fan service, but the world is the best part.
The world is the best part for sure. And there's a lot of open ended questions. A lot of things that you just want to know more about the world. They never need to get into it. So,
like you kind of, I almost feel like there's, not that it will ever happen. I feel like there almost should be a Disney Earth version of this world. Like, oh, here are the weird cockroach animals that grow in this part of the city. You know, they talk about penguins and
right.
Like just to explore the world,
sure.
Just with no protagonists or problems, in a funny way. Anyway, I like that. I also recommend it. I don't recommend it super highly, though. I recommend it as a fun, maybe even a thought experiment about the in this world how science can or technology can not only lead us astray the way the Matrix is saying or every movie you see out there is saying. It's more like we're way past that to a point where there is no one to blame anymore. I just thought of that now. There's no one to blame anymore because the only thing to blame is survival, and it's everyone's just looking out for themselves. And I think it's just kind of pretty nifty to watch overall, even if it doesn't really get you going all that well. But it does have some decent action, has some decent tension. Like we said, the stakes score is pretty high.
Yeah.
So let's get into our spoilers for Blame starting now.
Pull back. Cargo team first. Fighters, Draw them in and take them out.
Yes, sir. Cargo team, hurry! Ty! Hurry!
Exterminators. So many.
Ty! Forget your pack! Let's go! Come on!
Ty! Zuru! Hurry!
So what do you want to say before I interrupt you before?
Oh, yeah. About our main
Let's talk about this guy. Gilly. I'm going to call him Gilly.
I think they just spend a lot of time with showing his point of view a lot, where he's got all these prompts. And he's, like, obviously
you
Android.
You mean the Terminator?
Yeah, very Terminator-like. And he's got a lot of... So we obviously know that either he's got implants, he's not human, or he's like, stuck in this robot body or whatever. Kind of one of those things, weird things. We don't know exactly what he is, right?
Did you get anything villainous off him?
No, I never pulled a villainous vibe off of him. I just pulled a very, like, I'm dedicated, I have one thing to do, and that's it.
No, me too. I felt like, he wasn't there to destroy the village, for example. He wasn't there to bring harm to them, even though if that's what inevitably happened, out of, oh shit, did not turn off my phone. What? Did not turn my phone off. It's my first day. I'm going to leave it in there. People love mistakes on podcasts. It's all cool. And I'm also lazy to cut off this part. Deal with it. Anyway, I think that maybe, like, there might be... I can see some people, like, maybe a lot of people who watch this film would be preoccupied with the possibility that this android-looking man has been, like, walk the earth type deal. Like, yeah. You know, and that he's there coincidentally to save these children in that time. And also coincidentally be there in the time of their most need, where they need the most food or the most desperately need food. I mean, yeah. I can see a lot of people wasting time.
But we feel that way, and I'll bring it up. We feel that way, but we don't know how many times they've been in that situation before. Because they're handling it just pretty much like
day to day.
And we don't know how long they've been day to day. They could have been day to day their whole lives.
No, they mentioned that it's been 2 years since they were able to afford to actually give, like, sigil or whatever, or give their dad the rest they need, which is like a funeral offering.
Yeah, that's right.
Slash party, I guess. In a weird way, not party, but like a dinner, you know, respect dinner. They couldn't ever afford it because they don't have the time or the money, or not the money, the food to do it. And this guy was 2 years, so it's been 2 years, I would say, since the last time they were able to do it. Because they say that explicitly in the movie.
Yeah, they do.
So I want to talk about Gilly, though, because, this is a trope that I really hate about anime. And anime, I mean anime from Japan, anime, is that they tend to, like, have... always one character, usually in the shows that matter the least, meaning the ones that are less effort put in and it's just more fanservice-y, or they're just about, oh, look at this cool vampire in high school. But even some of the serious ones, they still have the same thing where there's always one character that's, like, so stoic, so quiet, so fucking stone-faced. And it's, this movie has the same thing, this guy, Gilly. But I think they do manage to get away with that for the most part in this movie because of this outer shell man that's not really human, and he's not fan service-y stoic, or like, not stoic like that, but he's not fake stoic. He's not stoic to be, like, he's not giving answers because he thinks it's cool not to give answers. He's not giving answers because he doesn't care. Or, like, it's for him, like, he's thinking about one thing, and he is literally only thinking about that. Like, if it feels like it'll serve him best to answer a question, you know, especially when it comes to about this little girl who's asking him, like, he's not gonna care,
probably, right? Yeah.
Answer. Like, it felt more okay. I'll go with you, stone face man, on this one. But otherwise, like, it's hard. Like, I almost wish, like, could they have made a movie about this guy traveling apparently 600 worth of levels on the ground? I don't know how that works.
Did he say 6,000?
No, he said 600.
Okay,
come on. I mean, there's ridiculous rough, and then there's ridiculous. He says 600, and he mentions, like, oh, yeah, level 200, I found this gravity gun. So, like, I want to see his travel, because clearly what he sees...
No, he said he found the food.
The food, right, sorry. He's clearly has seen so much shit, so much more than these villagers. And I'm not saying these villagers are boring, but just that, you know, curiosity in the, you know, the world building. But, like, also that movie would have been way more boring if Zero wasn't there, because Zero is the emotional hook we need. So I was like, oh, why can't you just make this guy have emotion?
Well, I think what they try to also do is they use that scientist chick, robot chick, as our...
Who had more personality, by
the way. Who had way more personality. Like, she was, like, begging to fucking talk to somebody.
Right.
Because she's been asking for help for forever, right?
For 17 million hours?
Yeah, some crazy amount. Yeah, 17 million hours, 560,000.
I mean, after that, it doesn't really matter how much.
Yeah, some crazy shit. Yeah, that she's been calling for help. And she's kind of used as, like, almost his voice. Like, she speaks for him. She's funny for the rest of the movie, you know, for us. Or she has, like, one-liners and shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's also very tropey for me for an animated a Japanese animated movie, where they just bring in another character, like a cat, to fill in the role. That's a very Miyazaki thing, for example.
Yeah.
Cats are very popular. But yeah, things of that nature. So, yeah, overall, though, like, I mean, I'm kind of tired of that. So,
I mean, I'm overall tired of it
too. Yeah, for sure.
Even though it was more justified in this movie, yeah, doesn't mean I'm not tired of it.
What's cool is that also he
can't... And also, it diminishes his last battle with the Safeguard Queen.
Right, well, the fact that he can't use that gun as often because it actually wears him down, we realize that later on, that he just can't shoot the fucking gun all the time. It actually takes energy away from him.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. It's a pretty cool little nifty trick.
Yeah, that's when he falls asleep, right? Or shuts down, or whatever.
Yeah, where he falls asleep, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff that's in the world, and I kind of like the end also, where they're like, oh yeah, I'm actually speaking the stories that my grandmother told me, or my mom told me, right? Did he say grandmother or mom?
I thought she said grandmother.
Yeah, grandmother, yeah. So, and then there's this other little girl talking, who's none of the characters that we've actually seen until the very end.
It's almost like this is a gigantic prologue, right?
Well, it feels very Sarah Connor kind of thing going on also.
Yeah, Sarah Connor or Naruto, maybe, like,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're just like, yeah, we're obviously safe, like, because we're living in this other world, but nothing has gotten better either. Like, nothing's progressed. We're still in the same exact spot. We still need food. We still need things, right?
But it's the whole point is that they're surviving. They look happy. They don't look starving.
Right, exactly.
That's one good thing, I guess. And clearly they have that scientist lady to help them out.
Right.
Scientist robot lady.
Scientist arm.
What's her name again? I forgot. Chibo.
Chibo, yeah.
They call it Chibo, but it's Chibo. Like the band Chibo Mato, which no one knows.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Do you feel disappointed with that? Because it clearly is a leading on movie.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's a leading on movie? Do you feel like
it is a little bit? Do you think it's tied up? I do kind of feel disappointed. And also, like, how do you live in an arm? It's kind of weird.
Well,
how do you talk in an arm?
Science, dude.
Right.
Or magic. I mean, might as well be magic.
Might as well be magic.
I mean, you just have to just believe that.
Yep. Believe it.
Yeah. Believe it. I think it tried to have its cake and eat it too. Maybe like. Leave it a bit open because they wanted to either say something with a non-ending that really happened, or they wanted to make another movie.
I bring it up also, but what did you think of that very right before they get to the end where they show like how happy they are in level 200 or whatever, or level two, one level down or two levels down?
Like a level and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also kind of shows, because he shows like they do this weird thing where the Sibo character or the Chibo character, she's in the net world. We're trying to get permission to, like, hey, let me in. And they're like, you're not...
That scene reminded me so much, like, this only exists in anime because you can't...
Right, exactly.
How you gonna visualize that?
They're like, hey, you can't get access because you don't have access because you don't have this gene, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, but I can give you access to other things, right? And that's what it was. And then that creature looked like the creature that was about to fight him at the very end, our main hero. You saw this face-like figure that came after him that he shoots with his grav gun or whatever. That kind of like he's like the last straw to defend them. So it almost kind of for me, I kind of took it as like, is he actually taking out like the mother, like not the motherboard, but like the main server or whatever that came after him because he already destroyed a watchtower. you know, and now they actually found them. They actually really want him because he's using one of their bodies, which is another cool.
Yeah, she mentions that.
Which is another cool thing that it's like he's like a broken program of them. He doesn't have the presets anymore.
He's like their Agent Smith,
right? Yeah, kind of like that.
Like, so the robots, he's like a wild fugitive, Charlie Manson type.
Sure,
killer.
Right. That can kind of fuck him over.
He's like the savior,
but he's also like the old model, like very T2-1000. You know,
reprogrammed.
Right, exactly. Just reprogrammed. They just old model.
A lot of robot movie references.
Yeah, a lot of robot movie references, but that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt like he kind of fought the server and either won, right? Or just he was going to get annihilated. Kind of leaves it open-ended. Because the last very ending where they show him walking, it's kind of just like, oh, well, we hope he's walking. We don't know he's walking. They just leave it at that.
Well, yeah, the whole thing about that grandmother who's been told stories.
Right, exactly. Oh,
the grandkid, sorry. Who's telling the story, I guess, of what her grandmother did. And she's telling it, you know, she believes that he's out there walking the earth.
Yeah.
And they clearly still know that he hasn't succeeded yet because the machines are still doing their thing.
Right.
Still building an everlasting city. I also like how they are so deprived of sun. Like, there isn't an open air of anything.
No, there's only, like, lights that do it for them.
Yeah, that's also... They should never see the sun then because they'll... It'll kill them.
Right.
But, I've always... Yeah, it's always funny how we try to neglect sun in some of these movies. And
mm-hmm. That's a very big Matrix thing also.
Yeah, that was cool. That was the best moment of Part 3, which is not the greatest movies ever. It's when they fly over the clouds in that moment.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That is cool.
The only cool part. What else? Okay, what do you think of the idea of this, the journey of it all? Like, it doesn't become a road trip movie per se. But do you feel like this movie was missing, like, a plot arc? I feel like, because look, it starts right away, which is really cool. They meet the stranger, and they talk about travelers, how they haven't seen one in forever, actually, in that generation. That's how long it's been.
Yeah, they only heard stories of travelers.
Because apparently there are people in other pockets of space in this gigantic world of city or whatever, that people do exist and live like these villagers do. And sometimes they go out by themselves, and sometimes they make it to another place and they trade information, right? Just like just like a nice guy routine about, like, neighbors, like,
yeah. Sure.
It's like the equivalent of borrowing sugar, right, from your neighbor, right? But instead of it's much more bloody and info-driven. Yeah, all that's there. I feel like there was something missing with Zuru, maybe. Like, I don't think she was... Like, I'm not saying she had to have been fleshed out more, but I kind of wanted her fleshed out more because I think we get more... For example, we get more out of the machine scientist, which felt more human, even though she wasn't... I mean, there's almost this idea that they put these humans put their souls into a machine.
It almost and then feels like
forever.
That, yeah.
I don't know. Felt very soma.
Or the minds or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strange. I can't put my finger on what it felt like it needed, but it feels like.
No, I do agree with you where it does feel like there's something missing. We also push a lot on Sudu's character, where she's our main, I guess, not the heroine, but she's our main actress. And this, right, they focus a lot on her.
Yeah.
But you don't know why. There's no reason why. She's just, I guess she was the leader of the kids, and we think she's going to be the leader of the future, which I guess ends up kind of becoming that.
Yeah. Did you see that about, go ahead.
But, I mean, other than that, they never really touch base on it. They never really focus too much or bring up enough with her to give us any more clues or details about her. We just know that she's probably the more fearless one of all of them. That's about it. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing else. So you do want something more. I do agree there is something missing there. They just leave it too much on our two androids.
Yeah, maybe the movie needed an extra. I mean, the movie's not short either. I mean,
hour 43, almost 2 hours. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that super long, but I felt like a right amount of time. And I can't say I want them to have more time, but I feel like a five minute worth of scenes of them living in that village before you meet the guy.
You could have cut down time on this guy loving this one girl. That there was a lot of that moment.
I mean, it was so momentarily, and they were part of bigger scenes. I felt like you could have put those in still. It would have been fine. Right. I didn't think they took that much time out of it. Towel, right? What's her name? Tay?
Tay.
Yeah. I don't know. Not Towel, but...
Sorry, but when you said that, I just saw the South Park episode with Towley.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I don't know. Tay. Did you know that that was going to happen to her?
No, that was cool. That was a cool twist.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought, I didn't think of it at the time, but I had it in the back of my mind when they first mentioned that they could mimic... Like, remember they kept, when the traveler came to the town, he could be a safeguard agent, like he could be as stressed as a human. Like, they were saying things like that. I'm like, oh, I wonder if we'll see that. And we did, but I still didn't see it coming until it happened. Like, oh, shit, you know.
Right.
When she was staring into nothing and not accepting anyone's thing, like, oh, no. And then she took the gun and shot the shield off.
She just dropped a beam on it.
Oh, I thought she shot it.
It was like a big-ass beam. She just threw it at
Oh,
it.
I thought she shot something.
No,
it looked like one of those weird rifle guns. I don't know.
No. It was just a big, like, beam or whatever, metallic beam that she threw on it.
Well, either way, I didn't see it coming. Anything else on Blame?
No, I can't think of anything else to add.
Yeah, I don't want to force anything either. Animation's pretty solid. It's okay. It's not, like, super great, but it's, like, a weird combination of CG and... I know CG is already computer generated, but it's like a little bit combined with, I don't want to say hand drawn, but some other form of animation. Because the background, I feel it's a different type of.
Yeah, there's definitely something. More like
I can't describe it.
It could be background stuff is drawn, and then the other stuff, the actual characters are computer, like software programmed or software generated.
Yeah. And I think that it's an easy watch overall, and I do recommend it overall. It's a fun watch, but nothing really. It won't. It's not Dark City, so because Dark City, I think it's pretty much like almost nearly genius level, because that movie is about our lives, in addition to being a futuristic world. Right, this movie does not have that touch, that connection to our lives.
Yeah.
So that's where it really falls through as far as making it a better movie. But that's Blame. It's available on Netflix. It is a Netflix acquired film, so it'll be there forever theoretically, and it's easy to watch. I download it on my iPad, and it's nice and sweet. So that's Blame. We're going to take a break, and when we come back after this clip, we're going to review a much bigger animation film, now in theaters, from Pixar, Cars 3. We'll see what that's about.
Lightning McQueen sets out to prove to a new generation of racers that he's still the best race car in the world. Cars 3.
Cars the Third.
Directed by Brian Feet. Voice starring, Owen Wilson, Cristela Alonso, Chris Cooper.
Chris Cooper. Who does he play?
He plays Smokey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nathan Fillion, which you knew that, right?
Was he?
That was Sterling, the guy who bought the Rusty.
Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy, because he's Mater.
Mater and another one.
Yeah. Arnie Hammer.
That's how he gets his paychecks, by the way.
Yeah, clearly. Arnie Hammer. Tony Shalhoub.
Who's Tony Shalhoub?
He's Luigi.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Bonnie Hunt.
Bonnie Hunt? Who's Bonnie Hunt?
Sally.
Oh, okay.
Ray Magliozzi. Okay.
Big fan.
Yep. Bob Costas?
Yeah, who's that?
Bob Cutlass. He's one of the what's it called? The announcers. Which
okay.
is what he does
okay.
in real life.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Margot Martindale?
Who the fuck is Margot Martindale?
I love this. Louise Nash.
Who's Louise Nash?
Louise Nash is the car in the town. I forget the girl. What's it called?
The crazy one? The black car?
I want to say so, yeah.
Margot Martindale, the great character actor from mm-hmm. Justified.
Isaiah Whitlock Jr.
And the Americans.
All right, let's get to that.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, cool.
Cars 3.
Never read the credits, apparently.
Clearly not.
No, never did.
What did you think of Cars 3?
Yeah, it was pretty blah.
Pretty blah?
Pretty blah. Look, so, it's...
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this movie is... I get it. It's Pixar's most other than Toy Story, most popular
brand.
Movies with the kids.
Yeah,
like these are the most kid friendliest.
That's the easiest thing to sell. I mean, what do you sell in Toy Story? Toys.
Right.
Cars. Fucking cars. Like right. You sell cars.
Maybe more centered for boys. A little bit more.
A little bit more.
But not really. like you told me yourself, you took your kid with you, and he was mimicking the
car noises,
the engine noises and stuff. So it makes sense. So, but I think these are the least adult friendly ones.
I would say so. Yeah,
the least adult friendly ones. So,
but Toy Story does a good job of being adult friendly as fuck.
What?
Toy Story does a really good job of being adult friendly as fuck.
No, that's why those movies transcend that shit really well. But that's why they're exemplary.
Also, Tom Hanks. Anyways,
well, yeah, Adam Shank, dude. But yeah, otherwise this movie is pretty bad for me. I'm not 8 years old.
What do you think? What you think happened at the end?
What happened at the end?
The plot twist, the thing that people wouldn't have seen coming, supposedly.
If I think the thing you're saying, because we're still in spoiler free area. I think. It wasn't at all a spoiler because it's super obvious.
All right.
So obvious that if it didn't happen, I would thought that was a twist.
Okay. I mean, I saw it miles away, but you know, like...
I saw it about 500 laps away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, see what I did there? See what I did there, Chief? Chief?
Give me 1 second.
Chief? Chief? He's going to beat me again.
Again?
No, I was mimicking that Simpson episode about Penn and Teller. Oh, he's like, your pen's gonna beat me. Oh, tell
him. Yeah. Okay. So nothing. Pretty blah overall. So I'll give you my impressions. I think for a kids' movie, it's fun. It's a fun movie to watch. There's a lot of things going on about growing, about knowing that you can't do certain things. It's also an adult thing. Also, if you think about it, as the older you get, you're not gonna be able to compete with the people that are just younger, especially something.
But Million Dollar Baby showed us that you can.
But what I'm saying is that, you know at one point in life, though, you will have to retire. He obviously could have, and he probably could have won that race if he really wanted to. That wasn't the case, though. The case was knowing when...
Did you spoil?
Yeah.
The ending?
What?
We have to say it again.
No, we didn't spoil the ending.
You just kind of alluded to something. He could have won the race.
Yeah.
Implies that he didn't.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, not I guess. That's exactly what it... Fuck it. This Cars 3. It's fine.
All right.
Jesus.
So we're in spoilers?
I mean, yeah, it's fine. It's Cars 3.
All right. The people of demolition, Mr. Ritter!
Look at here, boys. We got us a couple of rookies. I want to call you Muddy Britches, and you Lemonade.
Hey, neither one of them has a single day.
Oh, I'm going to fix that.
All right, everybody, let's go!
I'm about to commit a movie violation.
You obviously don't want to talk about this movie.
No, I'll talk about it. It's fine. I mean, we're here to do it. It's not homework for me. It's sure. Cool. We'll do it, and it's not a big deal. It's just hard.
Okay.
Because this movie's pretty much down the middle, you know? Of the road, you know? You know what I'm saying?
It's only on one turn?
Yeah. It's no fast lane. It's like in a circle. Not a slow lane. No, the movie keeps up a good pace. There are some funnier moments, like some moments I really did laugh. Some of them actually involve Mater, which he never makes me laugh because
he never makes me laugh either.
He
did make me laugh at one point.
In Cars 2, he was super annoying.
Yeah.
Super annoying. And the first one, barely terrible. But this one, he was the best. And actually, that one scene where he calls himself a genius and he proves it when he makes that call, I thought it was really funny. That was a really good scene. They really learned to how to temper Mater. It took 3 movies now, but it took the third movie showed how much of Mater we actually need before so he won't be too annoying, but also funny enough to be there.
Right.
I think this movie pulled it off. They had the right.
I think the first one's whimsical.
Yeah. The
moment you start rewatching that movie, it gets annoying.
This is the Goldilocks.
Sure.
Of fucking Cars.
Yeah.
Of Mater anyway, in Cars.
Sure.
So it's funny as let's talk about the. You haven't seen Cars 2. Right? You have or you haven't?
I have, yeah.
I thought you said you haven't.
No. I just don't remember it.
Oh, you were asking me because you didn't remember?
Yeah.
Oh. They confused Mater for an international spy. Remember now? And fucking John...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Not John. Austin Powers is that.
Yeah.
Michael Caine plays one of the agents. And he thinks he's a genius, but Mater's like... just bumbling through everything.
Sure.
Kind of like that Bill Murray movie, you know, when they think he's like a super secret agent, but he's actually just an idiot.
Yeah.
Forget the name of it. But that's a way better movie. Anyway, So nothing about Lightning McQueen there, but they went back to him this time. So cars 1 and 3 are about Lightning McQueen. So the first one, I love that. It's almost like a Tom Cruise movie where he goes from being an asshole to a good guy. And there's a progression there, and he learns through a lot of hardship. And it's very simple, but very normal storytelling. It's not great, and it's not even that memorable. Unfortunately, I don't remember much about the first one either, and I'm barely remembering the third one right now. But I think in general terms, they are this as far as giant plot goes for our character. I think the stuff that he learned from the first one, he took in great stride in the third one. Like, the lessons are kept, but they're also kept with he's still a little bit fucking selfish. He's still a little bit of a show-off because those things are always a part of him.
Yeah.
And I think that I love how when those parts leaked out, those were cool, actual good moments. And then he tempered them off because he remembers Hudson. He remembers the trials. He remembers what he's been through. He actually remembers shit. He has a history, unlike most of the other racers. And that's the whole point. It's like one of those Rocky movies. Which one was the Rocky movie where Ice-T, Ice-T, fucking, not Ice-T, it was fucking Christ.
Mr. T?
Mr. T. There's a lot of T's out there. Mr. T. He was the new and up-and-coming street from the streets and stuff like that. He was like trying to remind Sylvester Stallone, like Rocky, that you used to be from here and now you're overgrown and stuff. Like, I feel like there's a conversion of that in the same way Lightning McQueen and these new hard-hitting, accuracy by the numbers percentages guys who race a little faster and faster and faster, by numbers and not by feel. I think that's very normal stuff. It's universal shit. But it's, but again, there are just infinitely better examples out there, like the Mr. T or whatever I said also earlier. So it won't beat those reasons. It won't beat those examples. But as a kids movie, I hope the kids will get that lesson, but I don't think they will. They'll just be looking for the racing. They're just looking for the funny moments and the
antics.
You
don't think the lesson is there for
it's
also...
It's not How to Train Your Dragon, where they actually teach a lesson without them knowing it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But also, you don't think in a kids movie like that let's say you as a father, you would tell your kids, like, after the movie, you talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Because, you should, right, I guess?
Yeah.
You talk about the movie, and you'd be like, so what'd you guys get from that movie? And then you'd say, the movie's actually
bringing
this up.
I almost can't wait to be a father, just to ask those questions.
Right, exactly, but you wouldn't think that they would bring that up. Like, because obviously the fucking, if the parents weren't getting this, there's severe problems with that parents, right? But, like, or the adults.
Unless they're just standing there on their phone,
right? Which
balance in the checkbook in the theater.
Which nobody does that anymore. No, nobody does that anymore.
Nobody. Not a thing anymore.
No.
What's the deal with airplanes? Just saying 90s jokes. Notice 90s jokes everywhere.
It should be called round.
Round.
Yeah.
Kids, ask your parents.
Right. So, there's I mean, you don't think that regardless the story, the moral of it, you're being told to the kids? Like, obviously, if I'm taking my 3-year-old, he's not getting that shit regardless, right? He just sees cars in a vroom vroom, right? But, like, if I'm taking, like, my 6-year-old or something, or even 5-year-old, I'd be like, what did you think of this movie? Like, things of that nature.
And he'll say, I love it when the car went fast.
Right, exactly.
I'm not even saying that these movies have to do that. And it's unfortunate that a gigantic studio like Pixar, who is a branch to Disney, has the weight of on his shoulders to constantly show us amazing things. We've been spoiled by amazing Pixar movies. And I don't want to bring that weight to one movie, to Cars 3 of all things. I don't want to bring it to that, right? Don't want to do that. I'm trying to separate those things. It's kind of hard because fucking Upside Down or Inside Out, whatever it was called. Inside Out, Up, fucking Ratatouille. They're fucking amazing movies. I'll watch those forever.
Sure.
I want to show them to everybody. But Cars 3 won't be one of them. And I want to say, in other terms, I just think it's just a flavor of the whatever kind of movie for them. And I don't think it brings anything new to the table, not as a Cars franchise movie, because I don't think it's any... It's definitely better than Cars 2, but I don't think it's any different than Cars 1 in its value or story or every aspect of it. Maybe except animation, because it's probably a few years a little upgraded.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't think of.
Well, I mean, I think the cool thing about the movie, which is the big
Days of Thunder is way better,
I guess. The cool thing about the story of the movie, which is the very end, which is like what you can. It's like, I guess, kind of your legacy, but not really. More, it's what you can, teach somebody. What you know, and they already know, right? And they can become not a better version of you or whatever, but they can actually, become a better version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can bring that out from somebody because you already have all that experience, right? And that's what the movie's doing. He's teaching this person without him actually trying to teach her, right?
Yeah. But I saw that the whole time.
Dude, right, sure. I understand.
They spent so much time on that fucking sand. Like, okay, you're just teaching her.
Right, exactly. Right. And, I mean, if you didn't catch it by then, you weren't going to catch it probably until the very end. But after the very end, when they do, you know, he swaps out the people, the car, or whatever, right, for her to go mm-hmm. race, because she should. She already knows everything. Like she should be the one there because it's her moment.
To go back to the Rocky, it's like they. We wandered into a meat plant. He found out, guess what? This cow beat up your sister when it was alive.
Right.
Now he starts beating at it. Oh, shit, I'm trading. You know, yeah. It's like that. Like right. That, one, like that magical scene. Meat, yeah. Like that magical scene.
That's that magical scene. You're so stupid.
It's pretty stupid. My head was funny as fuck.
Yeah. It is funny, I guess.
Yeah. It's funny.
Sure.
You
sure.
want me to enunciate more? You know. What were we talking about? Cars 3. So, yeah, all that's super obvious. One thing I want to say, though, that girl, the trainer, that's super adorable. Even no, I mean, not like adorable, like, oh, like a bunny. But, like, her, just the lessons she was learning as she was learning, very cute the way she was learning them.
Right.
Like, I'm like, oh, you're the last person to realize it in a room full of dust.
Right.
But in a good way, because she's learning good
sure,
things.
Sure,
you're
sure,
on her
sure.
side.
Right, exactly.
And it's good, yeah. And so that was cool.
Yeah. I also noticed a difference from Owen Wilson's. And Owen Wilson does a good job of bringing himself in the movie, besides the fact that his voice is very Owen Wilson-ish. Like, the way he talks and pauses.
Poor guy. He can never be a mobster in a movie.
No, he cannot.
Poor guy.
No, he cannot.
Remember he did that movie where he was a serial killer?
What did he?
It's called The Minus Man.
I have to watch this movie.
You have to watch it. Yeah. Janine Garofalo plays his ex-girlfriend. Girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Also another role. Well, I mean, she can act more than he can. So she's more believable. But Janine Garofalo is still a fucking comedian, so I can't not.
Right, exactly.
But Owen Wilson
doesn't
crack a smile, man. It's just so funny.
Right.
And it fails. That's what I think it will.
Yeah, no, like, what I did like that Owen Wilson brings in the movie is, like, he's a really good guy for taking pauses. Like, he'll talk something, he'll pause, and then he'll keep talking. I'm like, okay, he does good pausing stuff.
Yeah, he does.
And actually, as he felt older in this movie, like, or what his age is maybe now, right?
Yeah.
In comparison to the first one where he was just, like, very, you know, kiddish, like, more of a kid, more of a young guy.
Yeah.
Young buck, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, what did you think of the sidelining of all the entire town and his, presumably because the first movie, they spent so much on that lawyer girl, that his love interest.
Yeah.
What was her name again?
Susie, isn't it?
Susie, was it? Yeah. I
think so, yeah.
Okay. I'll believe you. They spent so much time on that relationship, you know, not only
the Porsche, right?
The Porsche was saving the town and also falling in love with this race car, that we barely see her. It's complete. The town is silent. Yeah. It's almost like the town is the wife where the husband has to travel for work.
Sure. I mean, and what it really ended up becoming is just like it was him trying to just, you know, figure out if he's going to lead his, if he's going to live his life over there completely going forward, right? Or if he's just going to finish it on the, you know, if he's going to keep going this route until something bad happens or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I didn't hate the fact that we didn't have to spend more time with them.
You didn't think there was going to scene kind of come up or wanted a scene where like they where Susie or someone in the town maybe will try to stop him after the accident.
No,
like don't go back out there. Are you crazy? You know?
No. I mean, no. We had the scene in Gray where it was more like you need to go back out there.
Hmm.
Like, you know, like why leave?
No, I mean, they were
the
super supportive, but like there's also over supportive too. You know.
Sure. Yeah, I get it.
You know. Okay.
No, it worked out.
Okay. I mean, do you so what's your favorite scene?
What's my favorite scene?
I know, that's the equivalent of asking the weather for an open for a date. Like, that's the last resort question. Like, what do you think of the weather these days? Well, you know, it's like when the conversation's stale.
I think overall my favorite scene is when they're doing the mud race.
Thank you. That's what I was saying too. That was super cool. And the callbacks to it when they're watching the TV and then she comes out, winner of the Hollow Bowl or something it was called.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh,
Thunderbowl.
She said Thunderbowl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and that was really funny.
Yeah, it was.
That worked out well. They were all insane.
Right.
Why was he there?
They were all.
What a waste of time, but it was fun to watch.
It was fun to watch, right?
That's another thing is that this movie kind of wastes a lot of time with his running time doing these things that
it does.
Really don't mean much because they're clearly in the service of that twist that's really easy to see, but not really the bringing up of Lightning McQueen's ability to see. I mean, it is, but it isn't.
Right. Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
maybe.
A lot of the stuff that, but it still is a fun thing to watch.
Oh yeah,
we clearly just said
my favorite scene.
We clearly just said that.
Scene.
Right. You could do without it. The movie doesn't need
That's true.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's not for just a one line. She has a win under her belt. You know, to say that because she won a race.
Right. Like, I actually liked that Data correspondence, the super...
Oh, the 97% win.
Right. Yeah. That was when she realized that numbers weren't all, and she had to respond on air. That was kind of cool. I liked that little moment. I kind of wish we spent more time on her. Like, I suddenly was interested in her. Ooh, what's her story? Like, she clearly has, I don't know what, but I just imagine the story.
Yeah. I actually like the beginning a lot also, when they're racing and Lightning is winning most of his races, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then he's kind of doing victory laps everywhere anyway. And he's just like, hey, you get it next time, old timer. You know, just fucking around with everybody, right? Yeah. Even though he's the old timer.
Yeah.
He's obviously clearly the biggest vet there, and everyone loves him.
Right.
Right. I really do like that when he just chokes with the Dynaco guy, right?
Yeah, Dynaco. Yeah.
I say Texaco because that's what it reminds me of. But the Dynaco guy, he's like, yeah, if I could have you on mine, I'll fire this guy right away.
I'm still here. I can't hear everything. It's like they're all picking on each other the way, like, here's Oscar about to attempt some basketball name players. Right. LeBron and that Nuggets guy.
That Nuggets guy. Yeah.
It's like, you know, no, let's go with the 90s, but people I actually know. Like, Charles Barkley and MJ and then, you know, Bird. You know, they all knew each other, and they all kind of made fun of each other, even though they were different teams, different states. Like, it felt that way to me, because they're all from different sponsors, and they're competing against each other. But it's like locker room taken to, like, the arena. Locker room talk.
Yeah.
Very, very boyish, too.
Right.
Because not an inch of... there's a single woman racer until this girl comes in at the end, right? Which is strange. But is there... No, there is one.
There was one.
Just briefly, though. I would have liked one of their best friends, one of the three, you know, with Lightning McQueen. I wish one of them was a woman. Because that's how much I didn't forgot about that. It just felt so macho heavy.
Right.
The whole time. Very cool. Anything else?
No. I mean, it's a fun kids movie.
We milked this, though.
Oh,
I thought
sure.
we were going to last 10 minutes. We lasted like 20 minutes. So.
I mean, for me, it's a fun kids movie. I don't personally need to ever watch this movie again. I did my job. Oh my god, yes, please don't get there. But I still had fun watching it. I did not have fun watching it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I also had an adequate amount of fun watching it.
You should have been with my kid. You would have loved it.
Oh yeah, no, I would have. Another thing funny, guys. We went to the same movie theater, but we didn't see the same showing. He saw a showing that started an hour later after mine.
Right.
But we were both in the same theater, watching the same movie in different screens. Yeah, and it was completely accidental.
Yep.
So that is Cars 3, and that is the end of our show. You have been listening, I really hope anyway, to another movie podcast. Raf, do you remember this month's bonus show before this month ends? You know, this is the last show of the month. Do you know what bonus episode people can expect should they donate to our lovely show?
Aren't we doing Wonder Woman?
Yeah, we are. We actually did already. We recorded it.
Yes.
Early this time, instead of last minute like we usually do. So Wonder Woman is the month of June's bonus episode. And if you're interested in knowing how to get that awesome bonus episode and not wait 5 months later, who wants to wait 5 months? Follow us and follow the information given to you at our page at otherpodcast.com for that information. Remember, feedback is always appreciated. I want to hear your thoughts on everything, even Cars 3, at podmoviecast@gmail.com. All this shit's on every show note. And let us exit with our stuff before we tell them what we're going to review next time, Ralph. You can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N, Ralph.
You can follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph with two R's and an F. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter for any comments. You know, concerns, anything you guys have problems with at Blind Noir.
If you just want to bitch and moan about your work, that's cool too.
Just go ahead and send it on Blind Noir.
Send
at Blind
it
Noir.
To Blind Noir.
It's Blind N-O-I-R.
R. No space, no dash.
Right? No dash. No.
Right. There's no space on Twitter, right?
No.
All right. Poor Luke. Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. Next time on July 7th. Not only on July 7th, we'll have what our next bonus episode will be, because I don't know yet right now, but we'll be doing a special show. Do you know what special show that is, Ralph, on July 7th? I want to see if you remember from our previous years of podcasting.
Halfway point?
It's the halfway point of the year, which means what?
Means we have to make a list.
Yes. What kind of list? Jesus.
Top five.
Fucking pulling nails with you. Can you just fucking tell
me? We're making a top five of what we think of the first half of the year.
Right. The top five best movies of the year
that
so far.
We think are the best movies.
Well, our five, top
right,
five,
which almost never make it in our top ten.
Right, that shit is really interesting.
Interesting. Some do.
I think we had seen.
Some do, and they change positions.
That 80s musical one we saw last year. I just forgot the name.
Oh, so.
Yeah. So I thought. Sing Street.
Yes.
Sing Street came out in the first half, and it was made out of top five, yeah. So that's the only one that carried, I think.
Captain America Winter Soldier was one of those also.
Oh, from years past.
Yeah, from years past.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Sure.
All right, so we'll be doing our top five most best films of the year so far,
and
we're doing our top five most anticipated films for the rest of the year. It's a nice way to really divide the year up, and also because summer will really be hitting its stride by that point. Not to mention the fall and winter are the heavy movies, the Oscar nominated type movies.
But guys, I think one of the movies is going to be in my top five that we can't review.
What?
Sadly, what we're going to bring up as a movie that we both watched in the next podcast is Baby Driver.
Well, no, that's not it, Ralph. This is my special to you. We'll also be reviewing Baby Driver.
Why are we reviewing Baby Driver?
Because I want to review a movie, too.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it's Baby Driver. How can I? I'm not going to let an Edgar Wright movie pass me by without
talking about
it. I
thought we were just going to have to, like,
that's why
bring
I almost
it up
said
at the beginning
nope.
and just be like, Baby
nope.
Driver.
Here's what we're going to do.
Be like
here's
a 20-minute conversation
this
for
is why
no reason.
It's a lovely surprise for you. We're doing our best five films first. Then we'll review Baby Driver. And then we'll conclude with our most anticipated films.
Wait till July 7th, though?
To review it, it'll come. It's coming out next week.
I know. I'm watching it next week.
I know. We're all watching it, but we should watch it together, probably.
Probably.
You know, whatever.
It's gonna be a good movie.
So, everybody, hopefully, you'll listen to us then. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Ralph.
Lesser gap next time.
More gap?
No, lesser gap. All right, see you later.
Gap policy.